Okay, so today we are supposed to share my story or the nunnery story in India or Ladakh or anywhere else, right? So, thank you for venerable you, right? Who was laying out the question? Venerable Chinila, oh, yeah. They begged me to focus, go follow, not really scattering everywhere, so which is good. Let me see, how can I really share about, maybe I could just share my personal kind of story as a childhood, and then how I really came to Dharamsala. And then bits. I'll just try to put in like short, but let me remind if I go like some scattering in the different topics, then you can just tell me, can you just interrogate the topic? I welcome to make this suggestion. Yeah. But anyway, then, yeah, okay. Most of you know that my name is Tenzin. The full name is Choba Tenzin Ladron, which is according to my passport. And my novice ordination name is Tenzin Kalden, but never use it because I was ordained after like more than 1 year after I arrived in Dharamsala. So everybody know that Tenzin Ladron. And it's quite difficult to change the name. I know when they already, you know, custom call it that. So I just keep that an official name. And I was born in Zaskar Valley of Ladakh, I would usually call. It's very, very tiny kind of villages in the Himalaya, in Ladakh, northern India. So I have like 5 sisters and 2 brothers. So all together we are 8 siblings and my parents. And I live up until the age of 13 with my family. And like from the age of 6 or 7, me and my sister, we used to go to the mountain in the summer to look after animals, sheep, goats, cows, zomo, like horse, donkeys, we used to have that. And then sometimes we, you know, help to work on the fields. We have like, most of the Zanskari people are farmers, semi-nomad we call it. We have a nomad camp in the summer. We take the animals on the mountain, and in the summer, in the winter, we keep the animals at home. So like out of the year, when I was in Zaskar, before 1988, we used to get a lot of snowfall. Like almost half of the years is under snow, covered by snow, like from October, mid-October, early November until May or June, covered by snow. And, you know, life is quite simple in Zanskar Valley, but it's quite harsh too, you know, especially in the winter. It's really, really cold, and you have no proper electricity or anything. But, you know, we make fire with the cow dung and very little kind of wood. It's really dry. It's kind of desert. It's not exactly desert, but it's really dry. We don't have much trees there. In the summer, it's quite green, but summer lasts only a really short period of time. Like in May until September, 3-4 months. After that, it gets really dry and really harsh wind and like dust and sort of thing. But people are really happy and content with what they have and peaceful. And historically in Zanskar, they are really devoted in Buddha Dharma. And many scholars and practitioners that we have, you know, in the past, and still we do have, and the population is really small. You know, I saw like a statistic about the population in Zanskar. It was only like the register according to the district administration. There's only 13,000 something, but that's actually below the 18 years old. So who vote, so they register, and I got that from this office. So it seems like altogether we may have no more than 20,000 people in Zanskar. And the majorities are Buddhist, but we have small, you know, numbers of Muslim, but they do share the same culture, but they have the different faiths there. the Zanskar itself. But then we have the district, we call it Kargil. Many people do not really aware what is it. But in 1999, India and Pakistan have big war, the Kargil War. That actually brought Kargil known out of the world and on the world. Otherwise, nobody knows about Zanskar or Kargil. It's really in the mountain. And so, and there's no media, no newspaper, only like a radios. Like that's also like get the signal through the army. It's a very small army camp we do have there. So that was like 10 or 15 years before. Now it little changed. And then, you know, snowfall, it's getting less and less these days compared to like 10 or 15 years before. And nowadays, you know, the road from Kargil or Leh, the capital of Ladakh, to Zanskar closed like 3 or 4 months, no more than that. It's a good thing or bad thing, not really sure, because it's getting warmer and warmer. And the glacier up onto the mountain, most of the Zanskaris are farmer, so they depend on the agriculture for their food. If the glaciers just melt in within like a few years, they looks like it's going to be really big kind of trouble will come there. So, you know, whether the weather condition change, and then some, you know, it's out of our control. So what to do? This is the reality there. But probably we're okay. In the government of India will take care in a way. And then I don't know what it's going to be. But then, you know, if you do face a big problem with water, if the glacier, when I was really little, we have like a glacier on the mountain. It's quite big and thick. Now they're just very small, tiny left up there. And in 2014 and 2012, and His Holiness the Dalai Lama actually visited Zanskar, and he was looking at the mountain. See, the glaciers are melting. It won't last more than 10 or 15 years. So now it's time for you to plant more trees. Otherwise, you will face a big problem. So this is kind of the location that I come from. But I know I spent most of my life in Dharamsala for the last 28 years now, since 1988, look to the end of 88 and 89. But my families are still there, and relatives, and they are there. So Zanskari people are pretty strong about, really devoted within Buddha Dharma. And we have many scholars, Akashis, who really serve in different parts of the world, like in one of the monastery in South India, at Defung, and the Wama Monastery have majority from Ladakh. I mean, one of the Kamsens Hall, like in Zanskari, and they really serve the Buddha Dharma, like teachers, professor in Mongolia and Japan, and even in the United States, everywhere. So, which is, in a way, we can be proud of that. So, right? So there is this kind of situation that Zanskari like that. So maybe then, when I was little, and we are 8 children together, grew up in one family. And when we grew up, you know, we have the government schools there, but then we do not really have the custom or tradition that sent children to school. So, but we have this traditional way to get education from parent, from generation to generation. If my father knows, you know, like read and write, or mom, they teach their children in the winter time. You know, when you have the long winter, so what we do, we make a fire, and then, like, after 6 o'clock when it gets dark, and then we just sit in the circle where we have make a fire, and then tell a story, and then in the daytime, when you have the free time, the little children, the younger children, they mostly from boys, they should be able to read the script, like the Kanjura, Dengur. And if they even in the family, if the boys cannot really able to read this, you know, like script, we consider that really shameful. That's kind of a, you know, culture we have. And then for women, not necessarily you have to, you know, you should be able to read. because you know they we tend to like the women should work cooking or I don't know go to the mountain for milking the cows and the zomu and so that's kind of a tradition. But then the work actually at, in the house it's more like a divided both male and female. And you know, the men do the outdoor work like feeding the cows. And women do the milking the cows and ensuring the milk. It, they do have like a kind of a divide the work. And my dad do the both. And anyway, I'll just, what I'm going to tell, what I have done in my family, okay? And when I was, you know, able to speak, probably 4, 5, 6, and my mom actually used to teach us in winter, me and my one of older sister and one of younger sister, three of us actually like look like a same age. We have like a 2, 3 in different ages. But in the winter, it's really cold and you do not really get up early. So we just stay in bed. And my mom teach us to some prayer, basic prayer. But she can't really read, but she has some prayer that in her memory because of her, one of her two actually, one came back, but She had like two uncles who had been to Tibet and studied Buddhist teaching there and came back to Zanskar. One came back, one didn't. And who came back to Zanskar and he used to teach her a lot of prayer, even though she can't really read, but she can, but just by hearing those, the older one who are like hearing this recitation in the house or just orally, in a way it looks like orally transmitted. So she does the Tara prayer, and she does like the long life prayer for His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and then do a lot of kind of prayer that you do, like prostration for the Dalai Lama, Panchen Lama, Karmapa, and like reciting there one verses for each High Lamas, and does that early in the morning, and then she make us to memorize that we even though we don't know how to read, but then she just teach us like verbally. So that's how I, you know, memorized the, you know, praising to Manjushri. I still remember that. And there's another mantra, in the Hayagirva mantra, Tamdin. And then I think in 1985 or 4, His Holiness the Dalai Lama visited Zanskar for the first time. And during that time, he gave the teaching of, we call it the foundation of all good qualities, Yenten Jingirma. So he gave that teachings, and then during the teaching, they gave us the printed like this pamphlet at the teaching time. And my dad, you know, he memorized all that, and he reads that every day in the morning while he's walking, cooking, and go to give like a grass to the animals, and just by hearing from him. And me and my sister, it just came to us in memory. So then in the winter, like 3, 4 years before I become, like supposed to become a nun, we just stay in the bed, just with some blanket or some, you know, it's not really blanket, but we have, my dad make, the yak hair? Yak hair, right? So make some sort of blanket. And everything we wear, what we eat, is all organic, nothing artificial. What we eat, what we wear. And the chuba we wear, we make out of wool, and we have the sheep there, and the sheep and the goat. And my sister and my mom, they do the wool work, spinning in the winter. And my dad works with the yak hair to make the blanket. So we wear that when we sleep, and then into the animal skin, what do you call it? I did it, make like a smoother, and then join like this and make like a dagam, to wear as a, like a cloak, yeah. So that what we wear. It's really cozy. It's kind of warm. And then we don't have actually proper kind of mattress. It's funny. It's really true. And we get a kind of grass, put grass underneath. And then we have, in the winter, we stay in, like, in the, our house is really, really interesting. It's really small window and very small doors. And the winter, we stay right in the middle of the room we don't have windows in our, just some sort of window on this from the roof, and surrounded by animals. Some in this room we have the cows and zoo and zomos, and that room we have the sheep, and then in that room we have the you know, the horse and donkeys. So people live in the middle, so that keeps us warm. It's interesting, no? But that's really how the life is like that. But everybody was really happy, really content. So that's how we grew up to the age of 13. So all of my siblings grew up that way. And then when I was, I think, 7 or 8, another High Lama who was invited to Sanskrit to bless, to give teaching for the Sanskrit people. And that was in the summer. And probably I was 7 or 8, I can't remember anyway. But then some of my, you know, neighbor girls at the age of same as me, the parent took them to Rinpoche, Lojen Rinpoche. He actually, you know, have you heard of Lojen Rinpoche? Lhasa Rinchen Zangpo, the great translator of Tibet in like 11th century. Yeah. So he has a special connection with the Himalayan, especially, but you know, the whole Tibetan Buddhism in from the, I think he is the main translator during the third Dharma wave that spreading in the Sunni line, during the second, exactly. So he has special connection with the Himalaya, and the people invite him there. It was in sometime in the summer. So then we invite him to our village to visit, and he arrived with the horse. And then all the villagers, you know, gather in like side of the fields. And then, you know, two of my neighbor girls took him to cut the piece of hair up there. We call it the hair cutting ceremony, right? In Tibetan, we call it like tapu. And when my mom noticed that, and she asked me, my younger sister, would like to become a nun, to go to like get the, you know, haircutting ceremony with Rinpoche. And my younger sister, she said, no, she just ran away. And then she asked me, would you have to become a nun? And I have no idea what. And we do have nuns and monks there. Nun is smaller number than monks. We do have more monks. And, you know, many monks and nuns come to visit our house. So we have this kind of pakchak, like the imprints. And by seeing monks and nuns there, I have no idea what I'm going to do in the future. I say yes. So then my dad took me to Rinpoche to cut the piece of hair. And since then, I was supposed to become a nun. What I remember, what he says, in the Tibetan word, you'd say like a trola, right? When you do the hair cutting ceremony. And he does some blessing, but I don't know what blessing he did. And it's like some grand throw. And it is a prayer. I don't know what was that. But then he says, just repeat me, there's a tola. Tola means actually the literal meaning is we'd like to release or liberate. Yeah. So you just say yes. And I would say yes. I'll say yes. I don't know what I'm going to, where I'm going to liberate and what. But anyway, but luckily I remember that word. So that's how, you know, since then I was supposed to become a nun, but I don't know how to read and write. And then in the winter time, my grandfather taught me how to read, you know, like the Diamond Sutra, Dorje Trepa. We have the tradition in every Ladakh, in the whole Himalayan region, especially in Ladakh, we have the tradition, traditional. If you want to the children to teach how to read the script, we start with the Diamond Sutra. So my dad, and sometimes my dad, sometimes my grandfather taught me how to read the script since I was supposed to become a nun. So they taught me how to read the text. And my older sister also taught me sometimes, because they both, when they finished weaving the wool, so they, two of them, the older sister, they go to my grandfather to, you know, learn how to read the script. So they both know how to read. So sometimes my older, two of the older sisters, mostly my dad, taught me how to read the text. So as I was able to read the text, and we start with the Diamond Sutra, and then the next one is Dupa. I don't know what it's Dupa. It's one of the Prajnaparamita Sutra. Dupa. It's a sutra of collection something. But anyway, it's one of the Prajnaparama Sutra. So that's, we have the tradition for children to learn how to read, and no writing, just reading. So then, and I stayed until 1988. So when, but then I just know how to read the script and memorize some prayer, just some basic prayer. But we didn't have proper nunneries in Zanskar area. I mean, we have some small nunneries, but you don't have education program there at all. We do some rituals, and there are some nuns who did pretty good in retreat, long-term retreat. They know quite well, because just the teaching they learned from their elders. They don't have like a formal sort of schooling, but they get teaching from different teachers. But the number is quite small, but then we don't have the comprehensive sort of study program at all in anywhere, even though we have small nunneries out there, but we don't have it. And I was just keep curious, what I'm going to do in the future. In a way, it's kind of stubborn a little bit, and I just keep complaining to my parent. Am I supposed to become a nun? And what am I going to do? I need to study. I want to go to school. I keep saying that, but then they keep us to help to look after the animal. And it's not really big kind of difficult job, but looking after the animal, bringing them back to home, that's okay. As long as our parents are alive, we'll be all fine with them. But after that, what would happen? I see there are some nuns who use as kind of a, they happily do that too, but then used like a servant in a way. They serve for serve their parents, fine, good. But then their brothers, and afterward their nephew, and it's just generation and generation to go. All nuns, like walking with a stick, and then looking after their nephews and nieces' children, and cleaning and cooking. And I see that's not really good life. I often say, that's not really kind of the kind of nuns, I'm not going to do it. This is really coming on in me. There's a big kind of crisis going on in me, even though like really young age. And I keep asking my parent, can you send me a school somewhere? But then we have the government school where, the standard, the education system is not that good either. But then when His Holiness visit in, I think, 84, 85 anyway, after visiting him there, and he actually suggests to the Central School for, they call it Central School for Buddhist Study in Leh, then Bagulan Buchi, in a request to the central government of India to open for the Himalayan people, particularly to study Buddhist philosophy and Tibetan language, or the Bodhi language, and Sanskrit and Hindi, English. So His Holiness, actually, the Dalai Lama, requests that institute, can you open one branch school in there where he gave the teaching? So I know there's one school that opened. He really opened, and then we have an association called Zanskar Buddhist Association, and he asked them to cooperate with the institute in Leh. So I know there's one school that opened, and then I want to go to that school. But nobody take me to get the admission at school. And one day in the springtime, and in spring we get really busy because we have to plow the fields, and then animals get really busy because the stock that in the grass that we have stock in the at house, it's almost run out because it's a long winter. So then the grass is not really grow on the mountain yet. So then the cows and the yaks and zomos, they often run everywhere. So we have to go and catch them. Otherwise, the wolf or them some predator, what do you call it, they come and they can kill them. So the children get quite, they keep us quite busy to looking after the animal. So then I don't want to do all the time this work. And one day, it's so funny. I just walked myself to that place where His Holiness gave the teaching, where the school was open. I just went there and tried to find out if there's anywhere that I could get admission at that school. And I went there, and I heard that my mom, cousin, who who is cooking for the children as a cook, you know, at the school. And maybe I can ask her and to whom I should ask to get admission at the school. So I just walked by myself. Probably I was 8 or 9. Not really long. And I just went there, and then I saw, you know, she was there, and asked her, to whom I should ask if I want to get the admission in the school? And she said, well, you have to ask the president of the Zanskar Buddhist Association, but he's not here. And I can ask the teacher to whom I should ask. And there's one monk who is teaching at the school. So then she took me to ask that monk. And then he said, well, I have not... I'm not in the position to give the admission, and you have to ask the president of the Zanskar Buddhist Association. And I don't know where he is, and I don't know him. So I just come back home then. And I come back home, then after that it didn't happen. I asked my brother, older brother who go to school, and it was, there's some function going on in the capital of the small town, Padum. Can you ask that person that I can get admission in the school? And he went to that function in the festival. And when he come back, I asked, did you ask? He's not there. I didn't ask, he's not there. So then I stuck. I had no real chance to go to school. But anyway, then it just ended up like that. And I was keep complaining. But I know how to pray a little bit, how to read the text. And I used to go, we have some old nuns who do church practice and some soul offering. So me and another nun, we used to go join them to do it. That's like once or twice in a month, not anymore, not regularly. So we used to go to do just puja, but other than that, you know, I want to read and write. So then it didn't really happen. But then in 1988, when His Holiness the Dalai Lama gave the Kala Chakra teaching in Zanskar, and during that teaching, His Holiness at that last day, and I didn't understand, but the senior nuns who was in Dharamsala, and at the teaching time, it's my older sister, I'm sorry, my sister-in-law's older sister. So she understand Tibetan. I didn't understand what His Holiness said. So at the end of the last day of the teaching, she came to visit our house. And then she saw me like kind of shave hair and look like a kind of boy. Or what is she? And then she was saying, she was just there and my parents, and they were having some discussion, what's she going to do? And she's just supposed to become a nun. And she said, if she's going to become a nun, and yesterday His Holiness actually said that if someone wanted to become a nun and wanted to study, you could go to Dharamsala or South India where you can study. So if you are willing to send me with her, and she can take me to Dharamsala. And then my mom asked, would I have to go? Oh, yeah. That was good. So that's how really then I came with her. And her brother was, in charge of the taking back the His Holiness attendant and Namgyal monks to back to Dharamsala. So they have a book and bus. And she asked her brother, can two of us fit in that bus to go to Dharamsala? So it was just happening one day. And they were having this discussion during lunchtime. And then in the evening, we just packed and come with some sampa, and that's it. Some dry cheese, and that's what. So then we came to Dharamsala sometime in August. So then when you arrive in Dharamsala, so now it's just Dharamsala story. When you arrive in Dharamsala, and she used to be the nun at Gandhanchil Nunnery, but somehow I'm not sure why, she left the nunnery, and she was staying in the mountain just doing her own kind of practice privately. But even though she took me to Gandhanchil Nunnery, there's only one nunnery in Gandhanchil at that time. She took me to that nunnery to ask, you know, she asked the, I don't know, secretary or the in charge of the nunnery, can she join at the nunnery? And then they say, well, you can give your name, you can be in the waiting list, but we don't have space right now, so you have to wait until December. So come back in December or January, so then we will see. Otherwise, right now, we don't have space. So then I stay with her for a couple months. And then when I wasn't really sure whether I really get admission at Gandhi Chile or not, even in December or January, because they were saying they were expecting some numbers of nuns arriving from Tibet. If they arrive like huge number of from Tibet, then I won't have space there. So what am I going to do then? So then she heard that Karmaleshe Tsomo, who founded the nunnery, Jamyang Chuli Nunnery, and she took me to her, and we heard that you are going to create a nunnery and study program for nuns, and we'd like to accept her, join at Jamyang Chuli. So then she said yes. She was looking nun, I guess, at that time. Jamyang Chuli already started and before a couple months before with some old nuns came from Tibet, Eastern Tibet, like Tibet, come. And few from Zanskar who have studied like few months studying philosophy with Chadur Rinpoche. And then when the road opened to Zanskar, all the older nuns, they went to Zanskar to receive the culture teaching. And then some of the older nuns who came from Tibet, they are quite old actually, like one is actually over 70, another one is like 45 or 50 somewhere. So they were looking somewhere else, and one went to South India, and then few just left, but then they are already gone. And then there were two nuns from Kinnor who was there. And then I came the third person to join the nunnery and to continue. And then she said yes, but then, you know, she doesn't have space at all. And she was, staying in a rented house. We call it a cow shed, or some people call it Injing Gomba. It's like a shifted sort of mud house, very small, but it's quite cozy in a way. So she was staying in there. I guess it has some, later on we find out that it has some connection with Tushita Center, you know, the Lama Zubar Rinpoche Center. But we didn't know at that time. We were a little, we don't know. So then, okay, you can come to the classes, and she found one man, Tibetan man, to teach Tibetan language. So you can continue, you can come to the language class with them and two of the nuns from Kinnor. They were there already. They have already started learning alphabet, ka, ka, ga, nga, and ABCD. So they have been there like a few weeks, and I came the third person, and I stay with the senior nun from Zanskar in the mountain, and then go to class in the during the daytime and study and go back. That's up to until March to 1988, because Leshe doesn't have they have some rooms there, but she doesn't have the key of the rooms. There's some there's some problem with the landlord, or whether they learn, the property actually belonged to one Indian family who lives, Sunita, it belonged to, they live in like in Mumbai and Delhi. So they have so many brother and sister, owned by them. And there was some, whether they are going to give that or for rented or not, there was something there, I don't know exactly what was there. But all the rooms were locked, but only two rooms were open, like where she stayed. You know that, where is it, right? It's really interesting. You can see the picture someday. And she was staying in the next to the kitchen or bedroom or anything. Just, it's really, you can't really live actually in that way, but maybe Buddha bless somehow. You can't really live in it. It's leaking, and you have like mice and mangoes and running everywhere here and there. It's really difficult situation. And she lived the next to here, and there's one bigger room. We use that like using as a classroom, prayer hall, debate yard, whatever. So then we start learning Tibetan language in like a couple months. And in March, and Leshe was able to get the key for the other room. So she was able to talk with the landlord to get that as a renting for us. So she was able to get all the rooms keys. So then she said, okay, now, those who want to join at the nunnery, you can come. So then me and then another two from Zanskar who came, and then we all got the rooms there. And she was able to get some donation from her friends, and she provided us lunch and breakfast, but we didn't have dinner. But then, and she went to the IBD, Institute of Buddhist Dialectic School. She was studying at the IBD at that time. And then the Namgyal Monastery, can you please teach the nun's philosophy. That was in 1988. So then since then, she introduced the teacher to teach us. In 1989, sometime March, April, then more nuns came, and we end up like 16 of us. Another three came from Kinor, another two from Kim Ladakh, and we have one Tibetan who was already there before, and then a few from Kinor, I mean Spiti, and then a few nuns who were staying in Chopra House next to Trishita. They're staying as like a retreat kind of area there, but they stay there, but they come to philosophy class with us. Two or three from Lhasa, and another one from Kham, but they're just coming but staying in there. But we stay at the nunnery where we were, 16 of us just end up like that. So since then we start the philosophy class in English from volunteers in Lekshi, you know, send a letter. At that time, we don't have email, no phone. But I guess we have a fax machine, probably, yes, I'm not sure. But you know, send a letter, it takes like a month to get here and there. So that's how it really worked out. And then we end up like sitting, staying there and going to class at the IBD and the Namgyal Monastery and coming back and eat our food and gather into the small prayer hall and do our prayer. Mostly in the evening we do Tara prayer. In the morning we do, you know, taking refuge in Jujuy, Bonishita, whatever, you know, the normal thing. And then we meditate for half an hour or sometime like 20 minutes. It became really good custom, and Lekshi really did a great job for us to show us as a kind of example, and she taught us how to live like the nuns and go to class at the, you know, there. But you know, while you're living in the nunnery, and she really showed us how to do that. Was really effective for us, and for 16 years we lived that shifted sort of cow shed or shifted mud house from 1989 to 2005. So we live there, and most of our study, you know, most of part of our study we have done there. And we debate outside, and we have like here, big trees. We just go under the trees and, you know, in the morning and evening. But when it rains, it's really difficult. But then we have to just squeeze into the small prayer hall, much, much smaller than this. I think maybe like this, really small. But we have a pretty good kind of a wooden floor, like a floor. But when it rains in the summer, it smells. All sort of things are happening. And sometimes, you know, this roof just fall down and like wall collapse and all the sort of thing happen. But then somehow we were really happy. I feel like I kind of miss sometimes being there. Now, you know, the facilities a little improved, you know, compared to that time. And still fine in the village, you know, the main nunnery, which is outside of the Dharamsala, is more quieter. And then in Dharamsala, become really busy now. It's a really tourist area, and there are a lot of good things there, and many people come to do study, research, everything. But then it's too many tourists. It's a lot of destruction out there. So that's how. Anyway, I have to focus where I'm going to do, and I start. Study the whole thing like more than 20 years, 16 years stay at the makeshifted building or the house. And then later on, we were able to buy another house. And in 2005, we moved there. So that's why how we really start the study. And our teacher has been really supportive with us. And Lekshi really requests them. And then I have to share that with, yeah. And I think 91, I can't remember. Lekshi was looking at land to, you know, build a proper nunnery, because the place where we're living is not our land. It's belong to the Indian family who lives in Mumbai or Delhi. So they, and she asked them to whether they are willing to sell the property or not. But then they have different families members, and some wanted to sell and some wanted to build a guest house, and there's some disagreement going on within their families. So, no, you know, you couldn't really find it. And then she went to find a land somewhere, and we don't know where. Norbulinga, we call it Norbulinga area, or some with this, the help of some other people to find the land. And she went there, it was like a monsoon time, July, August. she went with her, I don't know who, I remember when her friend name, but I can't remember her face. Sally, yeah. With Sally and maybe some others, I don't know, some monks from IBD. I'm not sure exactly. She went to find land to buy and to build a nunnery. And she was bitten by a snake somewhere here, I think the right hand. And she didn't really notice where it happened. And somewhere saying somewhere in Norunanga area, somewhere saying like the land we have there, but not really sure. She didn't really notice that was happened. And after a few days, she thought, you know, in her room, it was in this monsoon time, we get, you know, roof leak, and then, you know, the wall get really wet, and then scorpion often like a fall from the roof. It happened a lot. So she thought it was bitten by scorpion. But then, you know, the Delhi hospital, very small hospital, and her arms were really swollen like this. I was really young, like 14 or 15 at that time, and the older nuns were able to communicate with some people, but then we don't know what's going on. And she didn't really say anything, and she went to Dr. Ishidan then to get some Tibetan medical treatment. And Ishidan, you know Ishidan, actually he used to be the physician of the Isidolna Dalai Lama. And she got some medicine from the Tibetan doctor, but and stay for a couple of days and working. And then after a few days, she became really serious. It was really, really swollen like this. And then few months from the, IBD came, and then one monk from Ghana, Namjal Monastery, Tenzin Dunden, the one who is organizing His Holiness visit in San Francisco, I mean, in California, he is the one. He, you know, like she used to teach English for these monks, so they know well. And then Sally, and there's another other one, Erica, there's another one, at least she has a friend. Her name is Erica, but I can't remember her face now. So two of them took her to Delhi Hospital. And then at Delhi Hospital, they can't do much. They were just trying to do it, but it's getting really, really serious. And after some time, Erica and Sally, they took her to Delhi. And when you get to Delhi, and then the doctor in Delhi, they said she was bitten by a snake. You never know, but then it's really, really poison. She was really lucky that it didn't really spread to the heart. It was really almost all over here. And a couple of weeks, she had to stay in Delhi. And then after some time, her mom helped for some funding or some, I'm not sure. And then she had to go back to the state in Hawaii. And she had to go under like 3 times surgery and cutting all this. You know, all the flesh just rotten. And they had to cut it off and then, you know, replace something else. And we don't know. And she used to write, she's so brave. She used to write a letter to us with the right hand, left-handed. She can't really use her left hand, you know, because it's, you know, there's a surgery going on. It's really for 3 years, I think, 3 or 4 years. But she, you know, through Sally, and she write a letter to us and ask her friend continue to send some money for us to have the food. So that's how we survive up to like 93 or 90 to 93, I think. I can't remember exactly the year, but like 3 or 4 years, she couldn't really come back to in India because of her health. But luckily she recovered from that. It almost died. It almost died. But she was really lucky that she survived, and then she did her PhD in the University of Hawaii. So she continued to support us for funding, requesting her friend to get some funding and buying the land, and you know, it's in the serve as the director of the nunnery until the year 2000. And even though she stay in the state, but she sent us a letter. And communication these days is much, much easier than compared to that time. At that time, oh my God, you know, you can't really, you know, phone call, we don't know, and it's very expensive. And then, like, out of 16 of us, our English level is also not really good. And then we often not really find people who could help to write a letter. We have to, if she sent a letter to us, we may have to wait on, like, a week or a couple of weeks to somebody to help us to write the answer. So, but anyway, communication was a big problem at that time. But anyway, still it worked out. And 93 or 4, she was able to come back to visit us. And then it continued. And then the nunnery started continuing growing. And then the property we bought, she asked some friend to help to buy the land. So then we bought it, and then now we have pretty good nunneries there. And the nuns, then the number of nuns, you know, it added up, like from 16, and then the second batch who came, like in 93, like 25 of them, and then little slowly it just ended up, now we have 140, more than 140 nuns and some lay women. So that's 140 something. We are receiving new nuns this year, and I'm not sure exactly the year. And then the children, the secretary said they're 140 now. Beautiful. It's really big and really quiet, and out of the town, and very, very quiet. It's quite summer, kind of hot in the summer for a few months, April to until the monsoon season start, but it's really nice. So that's how Jamian Chiling, or the nunnery where I grew up and educated, got all the education and everything. That's how I was, in Dharamsala. And then the nunnery in Ladakh, it improved. You know, maybe I just give a brief information about the Ladakh. And I have a friend named Dr. Tsering Palmo. She goes with the Tsering Palmo. And she educated in the, the Tibetan Medical Institute in Dharamsala as a traditional herbal medicine doctor. And when she finished her study, and she went back to Ladakh, and she became a nun after she graduated as a medical doctor, and she started the Ladakh Nun Association in 96, yeah. And then she's working with the nuns now since then, now like 96 to what, I don't know, nearly 21 years now. So the situation is improving now. So, you know, compared to like 15 or 20 years, it's improved quite a lot.
Was she able to start a nunnery?
Yeah. She did a survey of all the nunneries and the existing older nunneries. And then she's trying to revive or renovate the old nunneries. And then if there's some location where you needed, like, you create a new nunneries, and they were able to create new nunneries there. So there, and then what she did is she's, first thing, you know, that many of the younger nuns, if she just wait until they, you know, have good kind of, building and facilities and everything, then it, the times goes them. What she do, she do the survey all the nunneries, and then just ask the younger nuns where they want to go, what they want to do. So what she do is she send nuns to different nunneries in India to study, and in Varanasi and Dharamsala in South India, and some who wanted to study medical and become a medical doctors, and she sent some to in Varanasi, and some in the Central Institute of Buddhist Study in Cholamsar to study, you know, the modern education, and she tried to get like a sponsorship or hostel facility or transportation costs to help them. So she's been really successful since 96, and now she's been quite successful sending them to different
schools. Nuns come back to Ladakh and live there in the nunnery?
They
go out for education, do they?
There are numbers of them come back, actually. I know that two who have completed in Varanasi, and they came back to Ladakh, Leh, and serving in the administration. And there are 8 of them who have graduated from the Central School for Study, and some who sent to Jamian Chuling, who finished and teach the younger nuns. And then some of them are like serving as a teachers, like language teacher, mainly language teacher, in the small nunnery we have. And most of the nunneries, the monastery in Ladakh area, we have from branch school of the Central School of Buddhist Studies, from the center, it's funded by the Culture Affair, the Minister of Culture Affair in central government in India. So they have like 1 or 2 permanent teachers who teach Tibetan language and Hindi, Sanskrit, and math. and Buddhist philosophy as well. But so philosophical studies not that strong. It's more like a normal school. And then when they finish like in grade 5 or grade 8, and they send in different, you know, higher study, they have to send in like away from Ladakh. There's not really, you know, good facility like the way that we have in Dharamsala. It's the same as in Zanskar area. So when you're talking about Ladakh, we have like three regions. The central part, which is the Leh area, and then Zanskar is one region, and then Nubra is another region, and then Changtang is really close border to Tibet. So that's how in Ladakh, and also like in the Himalayan, other Himal part of the Himalayan region, like Spiti or Kinor, similar. From the Central School for High Tibetan Study in Leh, they also provide teacher for the Spiti, like Spiti area, and Kinor, and then Lahore. So they have teachers from that school. It's kind of interesting. They could have their own kind of, well, it's okay, you know, the Himalayan region are Himalayan region, so no problem. So they provide like teachers and then some scholarship for those students. You know, if you have like more than 15 students, young nuns or girls, so the government of India and the Minister of Cultural Affairs, they fund it, give some fund. You know, like, I think not much, the scholarship is not that much, like 700 per month or something, but they can purchase the stationery and books. So this is pretty good going on. It's for long run, you know, like for system, you know, for long run, it's better to stick with the government. So then we can have a qualified teacher. And sometimes, you know, people who have like a certificate or the degree that is recognized by the government, but their education level is not that good. When you're talking about the Buddhist studies, understanding of Buddhism. But they may have good language or math or others, but they don't have that much. And those who are graduating as a Geshe or Geshe Ma these days, we have this degree, but that's probably not really recognized by the government. It's a unique sort of degree we have, right? Some cases, there are optional sort of recognition you can get if you get like a strong kind of recommendation letter from some people, like a solicitor or some like a well-known kind of office post holder. Otherwise, the recognition is not there. But then you really don't need the recognition in a way. But then, you know, if someone wants to have a salary, then you have to have this recognition. You have to have the recognition. Otherwise, you can't really work. But you know, but you can work in a private school if you want to be a teacher. You know, we have numbers of private school who the like a common like lay students, they are taking special interest these days to study Buddhism in Ladakh. It's really strong. That's really, really strong. I saw last year when they have they call it the Yarchi Chembu in like a summer debate session, one of the monasteries they organized. His Holiness actually came for 3 days to preside in the Tirumuchi, you know, the former Ganden Tirumuchi, and he really paid attention to revive and preserve the culture and religion in Ladakh areas, particularly the whole Himalayan, but especially in Ladakh. So we were just, you know, went there to watching, and then these students are really interesting about it, and they were debating and asking questions, and the organizer actually invited some geshes and all from different and monastery who have studied and who have completed, and some are serving as teacher, some are serving as a, you know, social worker, whatever. So each day they are inviting them to give a speech, and these students are really, really taking special interest. So it's getting, there's some positive sort of change going on in the Himalayan region. And nowadays in Spiti and the Kinor area is quite strong going on, and Lojin Rinpoche is working quite hard with that. That's really good. Otherwise, you know, like in Ladakh, it's quite strong. And then in some part of Kinor and Lahore, there's some sort of mixture going on. All Dharma is same. Everything is same. And they mix up with the Hinduism and Buddhism and everything. And I was in 92, I was in Kinor, went for the culture organization. We happened to visit some few family house. I saw the altar have Shiva, His Holiness, and Buddhas, and everything all together. Kind of confusing, no? And if you have like a separate shrine, that's fine, but everything is on one, it's confusing. And especially like a lower part of Kinnaur, we have really much connected with Hinduism, and then Lahore really mixed up. And then now I heard that in Arunachal Pradesh there's also some sort of mix up going on. In Ladakh, the mixture is not really there. It's really kind of, you know, really quite strong about preserving that. And we have some Muslim, and the Muslim, Ladakhi Muslim are not really the, you know, they bad sort of thing. And they have the same culture. We have the same culture, same language, just the faith is different. So that's how kind of Ladakh is there. So let me finish now with the, what I think it's enough information about the nunneries and nuns, right, in a way. And then how I become interest to pursue into the Geshe program, right? How that happened is like, okay, I'll try to, as much as I could to shorten. Yeah, in 1995, the first nuns and nobles debate was organized in Dharamsala. And at that time, I had the opportunity to attend that debate session. That was for the first time in Tibetan Buddhist history, really. And I noticed that later on, it was motivated by meeting with a few of the senior Western nuns, like Champa Sedun and Lekshe Tsomo. And we have one sponsor in Germany, in Gabriela. And they were, you know, sending a letter to the religious office, why you're not really organizing this kind of event for nuns? And that's really good, right? And then the religious office sent a letter to all the nunneries. Okay, you should gather, you know, since you have studied the philosophy study, like since, you know, Gandhanjali have studied already before, but we have a letter. And then in the 95, for the first time, then the religious office and, you know, gather the nuns, you know, the beginning four nunneries were participating at Gandhanjali Nunnery in Dharamsala, 1 month long study, and there were two Geshe-la from Gandhan who came with them, and Champa Sedun really banging him to, you should go with them. That was really good. So the two of these Geshe-las came with the group of the nuns from South India to Dharamsala, and then three nunneries already in Dharamsala, like in Gandhanchuling, Domaling, and Jamiachuling. So we gather for 1 month, you know, study together, and sometime in the middle of the debate, the religious office organized to have the first day, I think His Holiness only personally mentioned, I'm not sure whether they request him or the His Holiness told them to do. You should do a debate in front of him, like we call it Thamja, like in group debate. And I noticed you were there. And I have the picture of that. Yeah. Did you notice? I've posted on the Facebook and to remember. I do, yeah. That's why I'm really kind of... No, I have the photos. The one monk from Sejong Monastery who take the photos. And he developed the photos and gave us. And I still have in my laptop. And you just keep them, and it's just to remind them, this is the first nuns and Jangunche photos. And I can recognize you were there. And Geshe Kunjot Tsering is right here, and you were here and there. I think Graham, what is his name? Graham, he's there too. So there was something going on behind that was really good, and we didn't really notice, but later on we noticed they were really asking them, do for the nuns.
So I had come just to observe, and I was standing way in the back. Uh-huh. And then one of His Holiness's attendants, His Holiness said something to an attendant, and His Holiness, the attendant started waving. And, you know, it's like, it looked like he was looking my direction, but, I mean, why is he waving at me? And he must be waving at somebody else around there. Uh-huh. And so this went on for some time until finally he kind of went like this. Oh. And I realized it was me. And
that's great.
And then he motioned me to come up. And then His Holiness said, you sit here. And see? I'm like, what am I doing here? You know? Yeah, I mean, His Holiness, because I was way in the back. He had seen me way
right.
in the back. And
yeah. See, this is the pictures. Yeah. I have still the pictures.
Yeah, and so I got the front picture seat with the nuns debating in front of His Holiness. Yeah. It was incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
There was everybody was so happy.
Yeah, and it was so the local people were having, you know, group like the Pamasambhava Puja at that time. And they all come to watch the debate, yeah. right? Remember? It's a big gathering at the temple. See, there we have karmic connection there. That's why for the last 4 or 5 years, I've been sharing these pictures on the internet. I mean, that's why I have the kind of exciting about the social media. Sorry. Well, I mean, 21st century is communication time. So you could share it like through text or sometimes through videos or sometimes photos. And many of my friends actually express this is really a good way to share information. And we can archive these pictures there. So it's something really cherishable photos. So that was the moment that then the day before we did the debate, like 3 or 4 nuns from each nunnery debate. And then the next day he called, come to into the palace. And then we had a special, you know, like an audience, private audience. And then he gave like more than 40 minutes advice. And he says what you are going to do, study this and this and that. And then, you know, study the philosophy, the understand the Buddhist teaching is very important. And when you finish, those who want to just devote yourself to practice, meditate, you may not need the, you know, like a certificate or degree or anything, but not everybody will be able to do that. So in those who wanted to graduate as a geshe, or at that 95, he said, after like a 15 or 20 years later, you, like young, or we are quite young at that time, like 17 or 18, you will be ready to become like a graduate as a geshe ma. So geshe, he didn't say geshe ma, but geshes. So we have to think from now, you know, and then he was pointing to the teachers, probably the teachers and the religious office, maybe the take the lead or take the responsibility for that. And he meant like give us really detailed advice and what will going on in the future, like in global level and how the Buddhism will be. And so that really stuck in my mind, really kind of strongly. And since then, I thought, I'm going to do that. And no matter whether I should use the degree or not, I'm going to I need to finish it. I'm going to do that. And since then, I just keep in my mind, I'm going to do it. And so that's how I did it and finished. And not only me, but, you know, like 20 of the nuns who graduated in December last year, I think 15 of us are like classmates and some are like a junior, like a second batch. We are among the first group or the first batch of out of the 5-6 nuns who are participating in this vocation program. So I'm really happy that we have fulfilled in a way that, and this is something His Holiness really looking from long time. And every time when we have a public teaching in Dharamsala or then South India, wherever, he always mentioned about the nuns. You should have the same opportunity, the same, you know, equal, you know, degree or whatever the facilities that the monks have, the nuns should have it. So he is the main person who is really like driving force, what do you call it? And then we have any other friends, teachers, all the kind of collective effort. The nun situation quite changed now. And then, you know, I think it's in the future. We have, like, we finish it, but then it doesn't mean that we have done it and go away. So we have more responsibility, bigger responsibilities, and then there are more a lot of opportunities as well. But then whether we will be able to use the opportunity correctly or not, it's up to us, right? So I think the future is really bright for all of us, not only the Tibetan or the Himalayan or the Bhutanese or the Mongolian, for the international level. You know, more and more people are taking special interest to learning Buddhism, especially the Nalanda tradition or the philosophical system that we have, the strong kind of traditions are there, European, American, you know, whoever have the interest, you know, it's open door for all of us, right? So in a way, we have done pretty good. You know, thank you for everyone who have really supported for long times, many years, you know. Without their effort, I don't think it will happen, you know. You know, if you don't have participation from outside of the world, probably you know, even though he's on this push, sometimes in the mindset of our culture, it's quite difficult to change. Remember the what do you call it? The Sikyong, we call it Sikyong, right? The president, nowadays they are calling president of the exile community. And he, well, in Daepong he made mention a few things that too, but then March 12th, and he was quite aware about that, and the mindset of our community is still kind of poor, and we need to change it. And the empowerment of women is very important. And when you say empowerment, empower with the skills, I mean, empower with the teaching, or empower with the education. You know, not really empower giving food or clothes. That's minor thing, but mainly you have to educate them and then make them more skillful and useful then, right? And he's quite supportive of that. I mean, there are a lot of people who are involved in that. So the future is really bright in a way, I think.
There was some talk about the new geshis going on and doing tantric studies together. Right. Is that going to happen where you get a one of the Gyumeya Gyutu lamas to come and have the nuns come together and do tantric studies for a year or two?
I'm not really sure for that. I don't really have a clear answer with that. And I heard they were having some meeting going on, and I'm not really sure whether they have final decision or not, if you're really going to do or not.
Is that something the nuns want to do?
It looks like some individual nun wanted to do, and some have not really sure yes or no. Because I was told, a few friends who have been to the meeting, at the beginning they were saying, well, we want to study in individual, their own nunneries. If you have like a final sort of exam or debate, not really exam, but some sort of, you have ceremonial sort of thing. If somebody is organizing, doing that, we will participate. That was kind of, whether it's true or not, it's rumors or what, I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure whether the nuns wanted to or not, but I heard that like 2 weeks ago, they said, it's going to happen, and then who is organizing? And they say, well, it's not really clear who is organizing. I don't have a clear answer for that. I'm not really sure, but I personally, I'm not going to participate with that. I have decided it because I want to do my individual way to study the tantrics. I already studied a little bit before, but not really that much. And we haven't really completed then with one of our teachers, the IBD. But, you know, I want to study it a little more, but I want to do like my own way. You know, we have the choice. We have to have the freedom to make the decision. Nobody can force for that. You know, especially study tantric, and you have to be really careful and who is the teacher and where. So I personally, I can make the decision. I'm not going to participate with the group. Wherever they are organizing, I'm not going to go. But then other, I'm not sure. You know, if those who are willing to participate, if somebody's organizing, they are welcome. They have open. Yeah, that's what I would say now. And I think that's it. Then, well, I think that's what I can share. And then I would like to share here. This is beautiful. And I'm really experiencing a really wonderful experience. Like, what do you call it? I didn't have imagination about, like, monastery communities in the West. Away from the town, away from everything. It's like the forest, you know. And the name you have it like creating peace in a chaotic world. It's wonderful, I thought. It's really, really wonderful things. So we could look in the future that you will have. I mean, you already have it here. Maybe you grow bigger. You know, we are praying for that and continually. And you are already being really active for, you know, giving service, teachings, and teaching online is wonderful there. And I use internet a lot, sorry. But I learned a lot from that. And I do not really pay much attention for those kind of some, you know, like a negative sort of impacts coming up. Just aware what is going on and then leave it there. If there's some kind of very strange thing going on, I often make some comment. are you sure this is the right or correct thing to be on the internet? If there's some kind of ugly things there, we can make a comment for the Facebook. I think this post shouldn't be on the Facebook. And why? They give the reason. It's harassing or it's illegal or it's like damaging the culture or religion, insulting. Like they give them a good option. And we can make a comment and we can participate with that and make them better. And when I was taking the course at the University of California in Irvine, and the Facebook founder actually, they make an announcement saying, we're going to delete all the hate speech that has been for the last couple of years. They're going to remove all of them and then make sure that protection and privacy should be top priority for everyone. And then Google is working really hard with that too. So it's, you know, communication is really the key, especially in the 21st century right now, right? So in the privacy protection, and you know, protection is more important than privacy. So that's why I wrote the first, maybe I'll share what I've done at the UCI in the writing class. The topic was the first topic, the first 5 weeks. So writing about, we have to write about social media. And then the last part, we have to write about American business. That was so funny. Anyway, American business. But it's really important why we do not really participate, even though we are not business person, even though we are not really a social media expert, but we can contribute in a way, right? So why I tried to write, it was the time was quite short, but anyway, I wrote about social media, the positive part of, you know, using social media. I tried my best to write. And then the business, I didn't really use the American business particularly, the global business. Because in the business everywhere, not only American, right? In the China or Asia or Japan, I don't know, in Europe, you have the business there, right? And I just tried to focus on the ethic, the role of ethic in business. And the book is really good. You have the teaching materials in the books. You have like many, many articles that put in together. And like economists, educationists, and they are really top, top people. They have put in the many articles together in there. And they are, what do you call the child labor situation, and then like a sweatshop situation, and in the third world country where some of the business people bullying or like treating badly, or then not only then in third world but even in like in developed countries, and there are a lot of issues that you can raise, like child labor women, and then like what was the other one, human like a freedom of speech. You know, like human rights issues. So you can raise a lot of these issues there. So I try my best to focus on the child labor, human rights, the freedom of expression in some area where you have the business going on, but many things are like behind the bar, right? There's no transparent. Like, especially this, some of the countries like under dictatorship. And for the business people who wanted to like have investment in that country, and sometimes, you know, the both have some kind of problem there, right? So I just try my best. And it was really a short period of time. If I have like three, four, another 1 or 2 months extra, I could write quite good article. But that was I have done. It's just
English language.
English language, yeah. But the professors are really kind to give us guidance. And I did gain quite experience with that. So that's what I've done, and that's why how come this conversation, because of the photos. I've been sharing our photos in Debung when we have the lunch with His Holiness the Dalai Lama on top of the Debung Monastery, and the photographer, the French photographer, and he have loaded on the internet the full file, like the 22nd and 23rd, both files are there. And I asked, can I share these photos? She said, yes. You're welcome to share it. And I have been picking up some of the photos and on sharing with friends on the Facebook. So it's many people are taking it as a positive understanding, not really misusing. It became really good communication tools.
We have
just to get aware.
We have a question from online.
Oh yeah.
saying, what are the nuns, and particularly the Geshe's, thinking about Bhikshuni ordination?
Oh, sorry?
What are the nuns in general, and especially the Geshe's, thinking about Bhikshuni ordination?
Oh, okay. I can't really say the other nuns, what they're thinking. I don't know. I really don't know because what they're thinking, right? And I personally, I don't know either. But the thing is, what I could say clearly, we have the Bhikshuni in Dharmakutika tradition, right, already there, like has been there for 1,000 years. And we respect as a Bhikshuni. There's no question for that. Not my individually, no, it's there, we have that. And even His Holiness said many times, right? So we have been already there. And then those who are like a follower of the Tibetan or the Mula Sarvastivada tradition, and I think His Holiness the Karmapa he's starting in those who have interest to take ordination. So it's there. So about the Geshe Mas, I'm not sure. I don't know whether they want to go or not. And I personally today, I can't really say yes or no. I have no much kind of, what do you call? I don't really know yet. So I need to further study or something. I'm not going to do research yet, but I'm not sure. Yes or no. Just frankly answer, I'm not really 100% sure right now. So that would I say. But then those who have interest and those who want to take, it's welcome and we really appreciate them. And so that's really something really good to do it, you know, something beneficial for them and just something that really beneficial for the Buddha Dharma or in general for women. So really appreciate for them. But I personally, I'm not sure. Yeah.
And so can you talk a little bit about what your plans for your life now is going to be? How are you going to use what you have built up for yourself?
Yes. Okay. What I'm thinking of going to do is now, I have special interest to participate in the, you know, the science and spiritual dialogue. And I've been a few science workshops, and I don't have that much in background, but I do have some idea what science talk about. And then that's one thing. And another thing is I have interest to teach for general public, like mostly like students, college students or like high school students who have interest in Buddhism, like introductory Buddhism or maybe not only just Buddhism, but like secular ethic that His Holiness often repeatedly talking about, right? So in the psychology department, you could have like this teaching, like promoting human values or promoting the, what do you call it, like discipline, like ethic, the human ethic, without touching with the religious belief. So I have that interest in there. So you know the group of Geshe's who have created like texts that drive from the Buddhist philosophical text and then put into like a more like mainly on secular ethic, or you call it secular ethic, but talking about how to promote the good values or good ethics in human society. And then if you start from like a elementary level from school and go up to the college level, not on a Buddha Dharma, spirituality is not only for the religious people, it's for all, right? So that's my interest. So I'm looking forward to working with that, and I have to see whether which place and where would be the most suitable for me. Probably India, and different, it could be in different places. Right. See, promoting compassion, loving kindness, practice patience, all these good qualities, how could you really promote that in human families? And, you know, you don't have to be like a religious person in that sense. It's like universal, right? So I have really strong interest in that. So the books are already like published in Tibetan language, and then the translations are going on, like in English, Chinese, Korean, so many different languages they are translating in there. So that will be really helpful for, like, we're talking about the world peace, harmony is happiness. So how could you really do that? And if you work with the children and college students and monastics, if you put all our effort together, we can create something really good one. You know, like creating peace in the chaotic world. Yeah, the world is really in chaotic, right? But then there's a hope also there. You know, never give up. His Holiness have given this statement, never give up no matter what is going on around. Keep moving, never discourage, right? So, you know, when you wanted to do something good for oneself and others, you face some challenges, some difficulties, but then you just be ready to be faced with that. If something really, you know, if you die, why not? You know, if you're born, you're born to be died. So what, you know? So I think that's what I have to share. It's time already up. So thank you so much for listening. And I hope I have provided what I supposed to. Good job. I'm not sure, but I'm quite not really good put in precise, but you know, I try my best. Thank you so much.